everyone. Welcome back to the Thrillogy podcast. My name's Cameron, and I'm here with my two co-hosts.
I'm Morgan.
And I'm Krista.
So if you haven't checked out the episode from last week yet, or the one from the week before last week, actually, we're doing something a little bit different. We're doing kind of these bonus style episodes. Honestly, long story short, we're all going to be on vacation. It just so happens that one of us starts vacation, then the other one starts it when that one ends. So it really has been difficult. So we're going to do three of these bonus episodes. We're going to read to you guys some interesting articles or posts that we found on Reddit about interesting cases. And these are cases that tend to be too short for a normal full episode. But as a result, this is completely unedited, unscripted. So it's going to be a little bit more natural. So regardless, it's a little bit different than normal. It's not as structured, but definitely let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can obviously send us a message on social media, or you can just leave a review on Apple Podcasts as well. After this one, we will have one more episode coming out next week, and that will be the end of season one, and we will be getting started with season two. So definitely let us know what you think, and you can be the very first shout out on season two of Thrillogy. So this week, Krista is going to start us off with her story, and then we will do what we did last week, and just each one of us will go through and share the story that we found, and hopefully you guys find it interesting. So Krista, it's all yours. Take it away.
All right, thanks. So the case that I picked for this week, I had actually heard bits and pieces of it when I was doing my makeup one day, when I was listening to the Mile Higher podcast. So it kind of sparked
one of the best podcasts. Just got to throw that out there.
It is a very good true crime conspiracy podcast. So it kind of like struck my interest then, just hearing it in the background. So I was just like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity to like find an article and learn more about it. So today I picked the case of Phoenix Colden. So 23-year-old Phoenix Colden was last seen leaving her family home in the 12,600 block of Country Brook Drive in Spanish Lake, Missouri on December 18th, 2011. She left in her 1988 black Chevrolet Blazer approximately 2:20 p.m. and has not been seen or heard from since. And oh, by the way, this is from disappearedblog.com that I'm getting my information from. So I just find, like I said in the previous episode, like people who disappear into thin air are like, it's like fascinating because I just don't understand how people can, how that happens.
Yeah. Oh, it's super interesting, especially when there's never any resolution either. Like they're just gone forever. I mean, we kind of talked about this. This was my story last week. We talked about the guy who kind of disappeared in the air, but found his body. So kind of different.
Yeah, and she's 23 and she left on her own accord. Like a 23-year-old has like the wherewithal to just be like, see ya.
Yeah, really. That's
so weird. Phoenix Colden was born in California as Phoenix Reeves on May 23rd, 1988. She was raised in California until the family moved to Missouri for her father's job, where she was adopted by Lawrence Colden. Phoenix was often homeschooled and was the local junior fencing champion and played a variety of musical instruments. And also, if I remember correctly from the podcast, her upbringing was really, really strict. As you could tell, like she was enrolled in a lot of like intellectual type hobbies like music. And I feel like fencing is like a disciplined sport as well. It seemed like her father really had a hold on her and she was homeschooled. So at the time of her disappearance, she was a junior at the University of Missouri, but wasn't enrolled in any fall classes. So on December 18th, 2011, Phoenix and her mother, Goldia, went to church and to the grocery store. After they returned home, Phoenix changed into her sweatpants, a hoodie, and headed outside to shoot hoops. Her father saw her get into the blazer, like I said, around 2:20 p.m. and drive away. And initially, her family thought maybe she had gone to the store, but when she didn't return home, they reported her missing the next morning. At 5:27 p.m., just hours after she disappeared, Phoenix Colden's car was found abandoned with the driver's side door open about 25 minutes from her house on St. Clair Avenue in East St. Louis, and it was impounded at 6:23. Her vehicle was entered into the police database as abandoned, but was not initially discovered by Missouri police since it had been impounded in Illinois. Her family was reportedly never told about her car being found and only discovered it on January 2nd after a family friend found it in a tow lot. Her glasses, purse, and ID were still in the vehicle. And there has been no activity on her bank accounts, cell phone, or social media since she disappeared. DNA evidence didn't indicate that anyone had been in the car with her other than Phoenix herself and her parents, which is not strange at all, obviously. And the circumstances surrounding her disappearance remain a mystery. Described as responsible, sweet, and intelligent, her family said her disappearance was completely out of character, and the case remains unsolved. So what's weird about this case, and I have a second article. Hopefully this is a little longer. Yeah, so this article actually comes from Oxygen. Because from what it looks like, I didn't watch it, but it looks like they did a special on it, that they believe that she left on her own accord and, like, wanted to not be found. Like, it's not some, like, malice or crime, like a murder or anything. Mm-hmm. So the headline to this actually is, missing Phoenix Colden had two birth certificates with different names and was possibly linked to an address in Alaska. So, as we know,
as soon as you said Alaska, I know exactly what case you're talking about now.
Did you hear the episode?
Yeah, I've watched this episode. I know exactly which one you're talking about. It took me a while because I was trying to think and I couldn't remember the name, but I know exactly who you're talking about now. Yeah, it's a weird case.
It is. It reminded me of almost like when Morgan did the case for Kathy Ford and the waitress at the end of the episode. Mm. It's like, are you new here? Or mm-hmm. and like scurried away, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, again, just to reiterate, she disappeared in December 2011, and the car was recovered shortly after, but her family found out about it again in January. So the theories, of course, about what happened to her range from foul play to being abducted into sex trafficking to vanishing on purpose to perhaps start a new life. So, in the second episode of the special on Oxygen, journalist Chandria Thomas and retired deputy chief of police Joe Delia spoke with a former private investigator who was hired to take on the case after she went missing. The private investigator, Steve Foster, revealed that Phoenix Colden found out herself that she had two birth certificates. I believe there's actually two out there, Foster said, saying one certificate is under the name Colden, while the other is under the name Reeves. Foster said Reeves is the maiden name of Phoenix Colden's mother, Goldia. So if you remember from the previous article, it did say that she was born Phoenix Reeves and later on adopted by her now father. So he can't confirm or deny whether Phoenix ever attempted to assume the name Reeves. He said he hadn't uncovered any attempt to update, apply, or renew any of Phoenix's government information at the time of his investigation. After the conversation, he enlisted another private investigator to look for credit history and driver's license in hopes of finding a link to Phoenix Reeves. The investigator revealed that there was only four other Phoenix Reeves in the United States and was able to eliminate three of the four names based on their background. The fourth Phoenix Reeves, however, had no date of birth, no social security number, and no relatives. The investigator conveyed that he was only able to find an address associated with the name from January 2012 to June 2012, and she disappeared in December 2011. And the address was located in Anchorage, Alaska. Delia traveled to Anchorage and spoke with a woman whose son owns the home. She said, her son has resided in the residence since 2002 and has no knowledge of either Phoenix Colden or Phoenix Reeves. He's canvassed the neighborhood, but none of the neighbors have any recollection of seeing Phoenix. So it's just like one of those, it's obviously super open-ended. She literally just pulls out of her driveway and like mm-hmm. is never seen again. I don't know. I can't remember if they had like anyone that may have had a motive. Like if she was talking to
I was going
boys.
To ask. Yeah. Did they interview her family? Like, did they? I don't know. It seems a little strange too. Like when you said in the beginning of the article that they didn't report her missing until the next day. I don't know. Yeah. If
well, remember she's 23.
Who knows? Okay. Yeah. That's so a good like, detail to remember. Yeah.
I also remember from this, her parents growing up were like very like overbearing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's not very often because for people to go completely missing in modern day, it's got to be pretty hard, right? I mean, with how connected we are to everything and how much of our information is online, like it's got to be pretty tough to just completely disappear, you know, compared to what it used to be like. But if I remember correctly, after kind of really listening to this podcast episode and then also doing a little bit of side research on it, I feel like this might be one of those cases where she just wanted to get away, you know, which it's also kind of a tricky thing, too, that a lot of times in you know, in a lot of these like missing persons cases where they're never found, it is kind of hard to remember that sometimes people just want to get away. Like some people just want to start over. It's I don't know, just depending on their situation. So.
Yeah, for sure. I actually found like another article on medium.com that actually said that at the time of her disappearance, she had two cell phones. So she had one.
That from like one for her family and one for like everybody else or something.
Basically. Yeah. So she had one. Yeah. Under her family and then one for that she paid for herself. And she was using that to communicate with her boyfriend who's named as Michael B. So her parents wouldn't find out. And this was the man that she was secretly living with while she was in college. So the man that she tried to hide from her boyfriend was also named Mike. So I don't know if she was talking to two people at once. But the second Mike's ex-girlfriend spoke with investigators and revealed that the second Mike could get violent and had been violent with her. And she had to actually file a restraining order against him. So, you know, the ex-girlfriend of Mike number two didn't really know if he had anything to do with her going missing. Obviously, it was like headlines in the town. Mm-hmm. But when she questioned him, he did say, "Why are you worrying about someone who's dead?" So they don't know if he knows something that no one else knows or he's just like assuming because most people, it's like they say, like in the first 48 hours, if you're not found, it's probably not good. So and her friends were also claiming that up until her disappearance, she was like very paranoid and irritable. She said that people were watching her and something was out to get her. So,
yeah, I know I said that I kind of think that maybe she just went and did her own thing. I really hope that she did. I hope that she's okay. I mean, that'd be a nice kind of flip, you know, nice change from some of the cases that we cover.
Basically.
But again, like I said, it is, I think a lot of times we forget that people do just kind of up and go. Like some people do just want to start over. And sometimes we never find out answers why. I think I've actually told you guys, On my dad's side, my grandma's mom actually, when she was a kid, up and left. And it wasn't until like 10 years ago, I think, that they found out where she went to and she had started a whole new family and everything. But she never told either family why she did it. So it like I think sometimes people just like, nope, they just can't handle it or something changes or, you know, who knows. But weird nonetheless.
Yeah, it was also strange to me because I feel like I also remember, too, that like they didn't tell her at first. I don't think that like she had a second birth certificate and that she had a life before her adoptive father. I don't know if she was like really young. But I feel like I remember like she found the documents and was like, wait, like what? And again, that like could play into like why they were sheltering her so much.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so hard to like disappear without a trace of
anything. Mm-hmm. Like especially now.
You know, yeah, like just that's mute on social media, pinging the phones, all that stuff.
Like completely starting over everything, like having no social media presence or.
Yeah,
I mean, and even just looking people up, enough. You know.
Yeah, so it's definitely an interesting case. If people have time, I definitely encourage people to like look more into it or listen to the. I mean, there's an Oxygen special and a podcast on it more in depth, of course. So if you're interested in those like disappear without a trace, left for a pack of gum and never came back type cases, this is definitely the one for you.
Interestingly enough, my case for today is also about somebody who went missing and has not been seen since. So we're really on the missing persons cases today.
Seriously.
So my case is about Carly Gousset, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. And this is, again, just like last week, this is from the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit and was written by Bubba Joe Jones on Reddit. So, again, obviously, I haven't completely fact checked this. It is one of the highest rated posts on that subreddit, though. So I do feel like those are usually a little bit more reliable because they'll get called out if they're not. But do understand that. And again, this subreddit is so, so cool. I spend a lot of just personal time on it. I think it is a great place if you're ever looking for some really head scratcher cases. But anyway, without further ado, I will get into it. So Carly Gousset was a 16-year-old girl who resided in Mono County, California. She was funny, well-liked, and a popular high school student. She resided with her father, 43-year-old Zachary Gousset, stepmother, 34-year-old Melissa Gousset, and two younger brothers in their new Chalfont Valley home. Earlier that August, Zachary and Melissa had bought their dream home, a three-bedroom modular house in Sierra View Estates. Since Carly was able to attend the same school, she was completely unfazed by the move. On Friday, October 12th, 2018, 16-year-old Carly attended a small party with her boyfriend, and Carly and her boyfriend had allegedly smoked marijuana. Apparently, Carly had suffered some adverse effects from the drug, and according to her boyfriend, she started to panic. Her boyfriend said, quote, "She got scared of the music. She got scared of me," unquote. Witnesses at the party said that Carly was acting really scared and paranoid, and eventually Carly then called her stepmother to just come and pick her up from the party. Now, when Melissa arrived, she saw that Carly was running down the street, and Melissa had described her as, quote, "really pale, like a ghost, her pupils were really dilated," unquote. Carly admitted to her stepmother, Melissa, that she was high. It wasn't her first time, and earlier in the school year, she had actually gotten in trouble for showing up to class while high on marijuana. However, once she was urged to stop by her parents, Carly's grades began to improve, and according to Carly's boyfriend, she hadn't smoked, quote, for a while. Melissa claims that they arrived home at around 9 p.m. and that Carly headed straight to bed after having a plate of dinner. She also claims that she checked up on Carly and her other children at approximately 5:45 a.m. and all the children were asleep in their beds. When Melissa checked in on the children again between 7:15 and 7:30 a.m., that is when she found that Carly was gone. Carly's cell phone and other personal belongings were still in the bedroom. After searching the rest of the house first, Melissa and Zachary began to search for Carly outside of the premises of their property. They originally believed that Carly had maybe gone out for a walk without letting anybody know, and they were actually hesitant to call the police. However, after failing to locate Carly during their two-hour search, the couple eventually gave up, and at about 9:30 a.m., the couple reported Carly as a missing person. Zachary also called Lindsay Fairley, Carly's biological mother, and let her know that Carly was missing. Investigators arrived and began to question neighbors in the area earlier in that morning, and witnesses claimed that they saw Carly wandering the area between 7 and 7:30 a.m. All of the witnesses say that Carly was walking towards Highway 6, which is less than a mile from the Gousset's home, and they didn't comment on her condition, but one witness did say that Carly was, quote, "looking up, looking around at the sky," unquote. Authorities deployed multiple resources such as helicopters, scent dogs, and search and rescue teams to thoroughly scour the surrounding neighborhoods. Interviews with friends and family had been conducted as well, and investigations into Carly's digital footprint had started. Despite law enforcement's efforts, no leads would actually surface. Melissa is allegedly cooperative and active in the investigation, but investigators note that her story hasn't always been very consistent. She's actually told two versions of her last few hours with Carly. Originally, Melissa claimed that she went to check in on the children at 5:45 a.m., which is what I already talked about, and that all the children were asleep. Melissa went back to sleep and woke up between 7:15 and 7:30 a.m. And when she went to check on Carly, she was gone. Melissa said, quote, "I went back into our bedroom and I said to Zachary, 'Honey, she's not here.' And he said, 'What do you mean she's not here?' I said, 'She's gone. She's not in her room. She's not outside. She's not in the backyard. She's not anywhere,'" unquote. In another version of the story, though, Melissa claimed that she stuck by Carly's side the entire night due to the condition. Melissa claimed that she had slept with Carly in her bed and woke up at about 5:45 a.m. with Carly still asleep next to her. Melissa then stayed in Carly's bed and fell back asleep, and when she woke up between 7:15 and 7:30, Carly was gone. As of now, Melissa says that the latter part of the story is the accurate version. And in a recent interview with Dr. Phil, I mean, this says recent, but this post is from 2.5 years ago. So it's still pretty recent, but just something to kind of keep in mind as I continue going through it. In a recent interview with Dr. Phil, Dr. Phil questioned Melissa about the inconsistencies in her story. Melissa said, quote, "Yeah, that was a false story because I wasn't. It was a lie about checking in on Carly because it was in the beginning and I didn't know what to say and I shouldn't have even done the interview," unquote. In another publicized interview, Melissa told Nancy Grace that Carly had been wearing skinny jeans. Melissa also gave this description to the authorities. However, according to witnesses, Carly wasn't wearing skinny jeans, but rather sweatpants. Melissa said, quote, "I only said that because she always wears her skinny jeans, so I just assumed she had her skinny jeans on," unquote. There's no evidence of foul play in Carly's case. There were no signs of forced entry. The front door was found slightly ajar, indicating that Carly had left on her own accord. And the night that she came home from the party, Melissa actually made an audio recording of Carly so she could listen to it later and use it as a teaching moment about substance abuse. Though the audio recording has not been available to the public, Dr. Phil confirmed that on the recording, Carly is heard asking her stepmother to call 911 if something bad were to happen to her. Carly expressed being scared and unwell. One article transcribes some of what can be heard on the 8-minute audio, and it goes, the audio goes, "Carly, I really messed up today. Melissa, we all do things in our life that we regret, drugs especially. Carly, I love you." Melissa then gives Carly a salad, and Carly says, "This the devil's lettuce." Melissa urges Carly to go to sleep, and Carly says, "No, I don't want to go to sleep. You're going to kill me." Melissa says, "Why would I kill you? That's preposterous." Carly, while she's sobbing, says, "I'm just thinking all of this demonic stuff. I can't help it." It's likely that the marijuana was laced or that Carly ingested something much more potent than marijuana. Early in the investigation, Lindsay had asked the public to not make wild speculations about a potential abduction as to not hinder the process of the investigation. On the other hand, though, Melissa had uploaded a video to her social media, which she strongly implied that Carly had been abducted. The video has since been removed. Lindsay fears that Carly suffered a drug overdose and that Melissa and Zachary aren't telling the full story. Remember, Lindsay is the biological mother. Melissa and Zachary both insist that they are being truthful and that Lindsay is just, quote, "just mad because she wasn't a part of it," unquote. Melissa and Zachary believe that Carly may have met with foul play once she left their residence. And Melissa says, quote, "just the thought of her going to the highway, it makes me feel like somebody just happened to be driving by and grabbed her," unquote. While the family doesn't believe she would run away, they don't discount the possibility either. Zachary said that given Carly's recent troubles, it's possible that she ran away, saying, quote, "maybe there's things she just kept from us. Who knows," unquote. And to this day, Carly still remains missing. Now, like I said before, we will post links to all of these news articles and Reddit posts. And in this specific Reddit post, they actually do dive in a little bit more deeply to the Dr. Phil episode where they do interviews with the family. I do also believe I've seen a video on this. It actually, I know we just talked about the Mile High podcast. I don't doubt that maybe Kendall might have actually made a video on this. It sounds very familiar after I've kind of read through it a little bit more.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too. I'm like, the paranoia part
Yeah, I remember hearing like this audio recording on a YouTube video. It actually might have been Kendall. And if it was, I'll throw that link in there too. But definitely a weird case. I don't know. The stepmom gives me weird vibes. I don't know why, but she just gives me weird vibes. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm leaning more toward like she was paranoid through that recording, as you said. And, you know, though that recording hasn't been released, the transcript, she's clearly paranoid and, you mm-hmm. know, she could have easily run away and something happened to her
mm-hmm.
in that like paranoid state, you know. So that's kind of, instead of going the route of, even though Melissa was kind of strange, you know, she
mm-hmm.
said that she was wearing skinny jeans. Like, there were little bits of weird things here
little
and there.
Little inconsistencies, but also I don't think they're anything big either. Like, I don't know. You asked me what somebody was wearing. I don't know. I assume, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. And so even though it was like little weird things, nothing that convinces me. So I don't know. It's another one of those things we don't know what we don't know. But mm-hmm. I'm kind of leaning more toward, especially considering her state leading up to her disappearance. I don't know. I'm just leaning toward that she ran away in mm-hmm. that state and probably something happened, unfortunately.
Yeah. And that's kind of what a lot of the comments actually say, too. A lot of the comments think that she had a really negative reaction, or that the marijuana that she had smoked was, you know, laced with something, and that she wandered off and got into an accident or something. But yeah, very interesting. I mean, there are also a couple of people who say that potential suicide. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. Although, who knows? Maybe if she was having like a manic episode, you know.
Wait, remind me again, how old was she?
16.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, like, if she was like late teens, early 20s, like, it's not far off that's when you actually come into those mental illnesses that are like schizophrenia or like really super severe bipolar, which could actually make you delusional.
Yeah.
And like kind of trigger her into that. And then it's maybe not an adverse reaction, but like a symptom of that. But
that's true.
Definitely too. Seems like, not saying it can't happen at 16 either. So still could be the case. I definitely feel like, yeah, maybe she was just adverse reaction and like actually paranoid. And then you hear of people that like, yeah, wander off and then something just bad happens, not necessarily like murder, but an mm-hmm. accident or a fall.
Yeah. Well, and other people have also commented too that maybe some people think that maybe she knowingly took some sort of drug that was a lot harder than marijuana, and that's why she was so paranoid about her mom calling 911. And she had just used kind of like marijuana as an excuse because of her reaction. But again, it's also really hard to say because her reaction and the way that she was acting when she got home, that could be a result of a stronger drug, but it could also be a result of like marijuana laced with something else, you know. So it really is kind of hard to say there too. So anyway, like I said, not no real conclusion on that one, but an interesting case nonetheless. Again, it's one of those cases that I hope that someday we get some clarity on and hopefully find out what happened, if for nothing else, but for closure. And I always feel really bad for the families in these cases, because not knowing what happened to a loved one, that's really got to be hard. So that's my case. Morgan, take it away. It's all you.
Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to end our episode on a positive note.
Ray of sunshine isn't so much here.
Yes, and I'm happy to after the dark episode that we've had. So mine is not a case. I guess it, I don't know, it depends how you look at it, but it's not a dark case. Have you guys heard of the glitter mystery?
No, I have not.
Okay, so apparently it is like a popular thing that people know about, like a popular conspiracy theory, but I hadn't heard of it before.
Interesting. So it's a conspiracy that you're going to share with us.
It's not a conspiracy. I don't even know what to call it. It's just a mystery. It's a mystery.
Okay. We'll roll with it. We'll roll with it.
Yeah, let's unscripted. It's a mystery. So This mystery first came to light in December 2018 when the New York Times published an article titled, quote, What is glitter? And that's not how I heard about this mystery. I heard about it from, again, the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit, where this poster goes into all of their theories about this mystery. But from that post, I just got a more general article to kind of give us an intro to it, and then we can go into this poster's post. And the username is aimless_renegade. So thank you, Aimless Renegade. I'm going to read this article now from nancydriver.medium.com, and the article is titled "The Glitter Mystery That Is Captivating the Internet." So, some mysteries are so bizarre and confusing that they will push their way into your daily life, and you'll find yourself thinking, will I ever know the answer to this? There has to be an answer. I'll just Google this one more time. There has to be an answer by now. And this is one of those mysteries. So, as I said, this first came to light in that New York Times article. And this article discusses the human fascination with glitter in general, you know, how it's become a part of our Christmas culture, various traditions, and it also talks about the leading glitter manufacturer, which is called GlitterX. And this is where that mystery element starts. So the journalist Katie Weaver speaks with the CEO of GlitterX over the phone. And the CEO talks about how GlitterX's glitter-making technology is some of the most advanced in the world, and very few people truly understand the scientific knowledge required to make glitter. So, you know, whatever, the interviewer wonders whether she'd be able to see the glitter being made, and she's kind of intrigued by this, and the CEO has a firm answer of no, absolutely not. Not even GlitterX's clients get to see how the glitter is made. And but it gets even crazier. So the interviewer, you know, although she can't see how the glitter is made, she gets invited to the factory. And she has a guide when she arrives at the factory. The guide's name is Miss Dyer. So the main mystery really begins when the interviewer asks whether Miss Dyer could divulge which industry is GlitterX's biggest market. And again, firm answer of no, I absolutely know that I can't tell you that. And the following conversation then ensued.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. So then they go back and forth. So the interviewer says, but you know what it is. Miss Dyer says, oh, God, yes. And you would never guess it. Let's just leave it at that. And the interviewer says, if I looked at it, I wouldn't know it was glitter. Miss Dyer says, no, not really. Katie, the interviewer, says, would I be able to see the glitter? And Miss Dyer says, oh, you'd be able to see something, but it's, yeah, I can't.
Excuse me?
Like, are you afraid to say, like, first grade classrooms are your biggest demographic? Like,
so the glitter industry is, like, a massive industry, but the internet has truly taken this exchange and ran with it because it's just shade. It's like weird. Why is there so much mystery around which industry is the biggest customer? Like, that's just a fun question, you would think.
Yeah. Well, like, also, not too, even like, a specific company. Like, nothing like that. It, like, where do I see glitter outside of like a party? Like,
decorations. Like, it's pre put on. But
yeah,
like,
I guess. Yeah. Loose. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
You've got me hooked.
Thank you. Yeah. So again, everyone like us was intrigued by this. The internet has totally come, with, come up with tons of different theories around this. Because again, like we were saying, why is there so much secrecy around this? It's like a very straightforward question. Like Krista said, you could be like, oh, schools are our biggest customer. Like nothing specific, but why was she so cagey with her response? So anyway, that's let me true. Get back into the article. Yeah, it was weird. So, like I said, a ton of theories. And while none of the theories seem perfect, these are the top ones. And I'll just list them out and then I'll get into the details. So the first theory is that the military is their number one customer. Another theory is that it's cosmetics and toothpaste. And another is that it's for explosives and micro tagants, which I guess I'll get into that later, but that's part of explosives. So basically people are saying that it could be obviously for something that you would have no idea that glitter was in, or you'd be shocked that glitter was in, especially based on that exchange. So the first theory, military, let's get into that one. So people say the military is buying this huge amount of glitter to use in various top secret ways. One use for this much glitter could be for stealth coatings on military crafts, such as the F-22 and the F-35 fighters. And these planes, and particularly the latter plane, is being produced in fairly high quantities by the U.S. military. So that would make sense why they would need such a large amount of glitter if they were using it for paint. But it kind of leads to the question, would glitter make a good coating for stealth planes? It's certainly possible. But stealth planes need to be coated in radar absorbent material, which is usually, you know, a concoction of finely ground metals, much like glitter. So that was why this first theory came to be. The main problem with this theory is that it would mean that the quantity of glitter being used by the military would have to exceed the quantity being used by the automotive industry, in order for it to be GlitterX's biggest market. So many people find it hard to believe that more glitter is being used on stealth planes than by the automotive industry, who we know use a lot of glitter for paint jobs and all that kind of stuff. So,
see, that makes sense. But people rip off governments all the time when it comes to military spending because they know that they're going to spend money on it. So what you know, if you're a glitter manufacturer, what you could potentially sell glitter to, like a car company or to like a school, it could be the exact same thing, but they could easily charge 10 times to the military for that same amount of glitter. And they wouldn't even blink an eye. They would just pay it. They don't care. You know, it happens a lot with like different parts and equipment. Right. So maybe that's why, like, now that I think about it, maybe that's why she didn't want to mention it, because saying that your biggest industry is the military, maybe that could cause some sort of controversy, or maybe it would cause people to like look into how much they're paying. Like, how much are you charging the government for something that you don't charge other people for? Maybe. I don't know.
There's like a whole movie on that. I think it's called War Dogs, and the two guys, Jonah Hill is in it. They do that. They go online and they look for government contracts for weapons, because the government will pay any amount of money.
Literally anything.
And they don't care. They find them and they made millions and millions of dollars. It was a really good movie, but like going back to what you said, like they'll pay triple, quadruple, 25 times what a school would pay.
Yeah,
that's true. That's a good point. I don't know. Something about the exchange though, for me, I don't know. Why was she like,
yeah,
you would never guess it. Like, you wouldn't know it was glitter. Like, I don't know. Like, military, why would, if it was really a money thing, like they were just being overcharged.
Mm-hmm.
That exchange.
She also said you would never guess it. And before this podcast, I would have never guessed that the military was buying glitter anyway, for even for paint. Like,
that's
true. I didn't even think about paint. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about glitter being part of paint. So, I don't know. Interesting. I'll be curious to hear what the other ideas are. So.
So, like I said, the next theory is cosmetics and toothpaste. So many people have suggested that the answer could be the beauty industry. Many kinds of toothpaste, shampoos, conditioners, and other self-care products often have a sparkle to them, which could in theory be glitter. Producing vast amounts of glitter to use in cosmetic products would be a significant environmental effect, which these industries might want to shy away from, and that might
explain.
That might explain the secrecy. And not to mention, I mean, this doesn't say it in the article, but I wouldn't want to be ingesting glitter. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, glitter and those microbeads that are in like a lot of face washes, I think that they like make their way through like the water table or something like that. And yeah, they're really harmful. People try and tell you online, like, don't buy those face washes, especially with the little beads, because those are straight plastic. I don't know what glitter's components are, but.
I didn't know that. Again, it's one of maybe that's why after hearing this, whether it is the beauty industry or maybe it is the military, whatever it is, both are very controversial. Like one from a military side of things, like military is always controversial no matter what. And then cosmetics from an environmental standpoint, again, also controversial. So maybe the person just kind of, again, I want to hear the rest of what you have to say, but I can't help but feel like that person who was giving the interview or was explaining things was like excited to say it and was going to say it. And then they were like, oh shit. If I say this, like I might really screw us over in 2 seconds, you know, creating a controversy over something that didn't exist before. So
also with cosmetics, though, like it's a known fact, I'm pretty sure, that the cosmetics, at least makeup, they have mica, M-I-C-A, mining overseas in other countries that are like poor and exploited. And that's another really big controversy in the beauty industry. That a lot of companies now are trying to say like, oh, our mica is sourced like ethically and stuff like that. So it's like, I feel like saying that you're a glitter manufacturer selling majorly to cosmetic companies cannot be worse than mica being mined by like children overseas. Like, you should have just said it. It's not like.
That's true. And I also feel like if it was the cosmetic industry, like especially for makeup, people wouldn't be shocked that there's glitter in like your bronzer or something like that. Like I would be a little turned off if there was glitter in my toothpaste. I don't want to be swallowing glitter. But if it was like makeup or other cosmetics, it's not super shocking. Like I don't know if the tour guide or, you know, the Miss Dyer's response would be, you would never guess it if it was makeup or cosmetics. So I don't know. The next theory is explosives and microtaggants. So microtaggants are microscopic particles that can be used to identify or trace explosive materials, and this prevents them from being counterfeited. So it's possible that a certain identifiable type of glitter is added to commercial explosives in order to make them easier to identify after they detonate. So this would mean that any illegally made and detonated explosives would leave an identifiable fingerprint that could lead authorities to the source.
Again, controversial. I don't think explosives are non-controversial. I, as you continue to go on, I really do just believe like this interviewer was like, oh shit. Like I'm gonna make the biggest PR fail in our company's history if I don't shut up here in a second. And they're like, oh, you never guess it. Well, let's move on. Look at this. Check this out. Like as they're making bombs in the next room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
So that is where the article ends, but I did want to go back to Reddit and this poster's extensive post here on their theories, because like I said, this has taken the internet by storm. So there are tons of different theories besides the ones that I just went through in this article. So wait, I'm going
to... Can I say mine before you say you've read it once? Because I want to see if this is someone's. I feel like companies sometimes, they... Like, okay, if you saw a New York Times article, like an expose on a glitter factory, I feel like you'll be here today, gone tomorrow. Like, okay, it's glitter factory. Like, they make craft supplies. Like, no one's going to guess that it's in military weaponry or aircrafts or anything like that. But when the tour guide or whatever says something along the lines of, you would never guess, like, it's so, like, out there. Now this writer is going to go back to the New York Times, like, one of the biggest newspapers, and say, like, it was so mysterious. And it's like a PR. It's actually not a PR fail. It's like a PR genius move, because now everyone's going to talk about it. Everyone's talking about Glitter X on Reddit, on the New York Times. We're talking about it now, and that's, we're going to continue to think about it later, which would have been like a no-name company and really just like a little Joe Blow article. But now that's, it's true, something. Could have been a
something. Imagine all point. The people who have gone to the article. Imagine all the people who have paid to read the article.
Right. And interview them for their small, you know, maybe someone across the country or on the other side of the globe doesn't read the New York Times, but their journalist was like, oh, this is good. And they went to interview and got the same answer. And now it's spreading to that country too, like this mysterious company. So I'm always like on the side of like PR. It's PR.
Yeah,
related.
But why would it? Yeah, I am too, generally. I do believe like the New York Times could have totally blown this up. And like crafted this article in a way that got them more clicks and got them publicity. But I don't think GlitterX, the company, like, they don't, who's buying glitter from the source? Like, I don't know.
That's, well, it's not like Crayola. If you saw a Crayola article, you'd be like, okay, cool. This is how they make crayons. They sell them to schools, drugstores. Okay, cool. But now Crayola was like, you have no idea where our wax goes. Everyone would be buzzing about Crayola.
That's true. I just felt like, and I could be totally wrong, like, this isn't a company that needs publicity. Like, they just have customer. Like, they're not direct to consumer, if that makes sense. Like, their customers are cosmetic companies. Like, they, I feel like the majority of their business, if not all of their business, is to other industries and other companies. So, I don't know. I almost feel like it's probably, I'm leaning more toward like New York Times blowing it up for clicks, but who knows? So again, I'll go back to Reddit now. And the poster's name again is aimless_renegade. So first the poster goes on to give like a brief summary of the mystery. And they say that we have some major hints to narrow things down quite a bit. So the two hints are, one, this isn't something you necessarily think was glitter or had glitter in it. And two, it's something that people might be upset to learn contained glitter. So these are really important clues because they sort of narrow down all of the major guesses. So like we said, automotives, boats, planes, paints in general, they obviously have glitter in them, and no one would care if they did. Cosmetics and beauty, and this is what I said, and the poster says the poster's a 35-year-old woman, and she knows that the makeup community already knows and doesn't care that there's glitter in their makeup. And, you know, I kind of feel the same way. And it's funny, Krista, that you said that, because I skimmed this poster's post, but I didn't see that they mentioned mica as well. And she said, considering all the issues around mining mica, they would probably be happy to know that it was synthetic glitter and not, you know, another controversy.
Yep.
it was just funny that she went into that too, but. She goes on to say aerospace, they might use it, but not in the quantities that would even come close to matching the volume of consumer products sold every day. Same for the military. And this poster is actually an Army veteran, and she says she hasn't seen anything going on in the Department of Defense, but if they did use glitter, she feels like they would have seen some, like, she's a veteran, she would have seen some sort of, like, glitter if they were being sold in that, in those big quantities. So then the only thing she says that truly fits is that it's something you'd commonly buy or use and is most likely something that you put in or on your body. On your body, she says, is pretty much out because we know that GlitterX supplies cosmetic pigments. It's mentioned in the original article that they sell to Revlon. And she also found a Facebook post from the local radio station whose fun fact for the day was that GlitterX sells to cosmetic companies. And I will link to this as well. And you can also search for, quote, Cranford Radio GlitterX, and that will pull up that post if you would like to see it for yourself. So cosmetics are pretty much ruled out in that regard, because they had already publicly said that they work with cosmetic companies. But the poster says she thinks cosmetics are definitely related to the biggest client. And as we unravel the mystery, it will be very important. It's very important that GlitterX is open about their production of cosmetic pigments. So just keep that in the back of your mind as we're going through this. That leaves us with something that you put in your body. So she began to investigate the wide world of food, cosmetic, and drug dyes. So there are actually a few different types of food dyes. In fact, not all of them can really be called, quote, dye. In the world of FD&C coloring, the term dye only refers to water-soluble chemical that transfers color. On the other hand, a lake is a colorant that is made of a suspension of pigment, usually in some type of oil. So lakes are very interesting substances as they're made of dyes that are attached to some kind of substrate, often an aluminum oxide. So there's also an article that's kind of difficult to understand where they explain how GlitterX makes their glitter. And the poster quotes this, and I'll just read part of it, but they say, this polyester film, people might know as Mylar, is the same polymer that is used in a water bottle, so FDA approved. If you cut this, you get a clear glitter. The bulk of GlitterX glitter is made from plastic, though some varieties come from other sources like aluminum. Clear glitter looks like tiny pieces of dead jellyfish. Then we go to the next iteration of a substitute where the clear film is metallized. Potato chip bags start with the same sort of polymer film. It's metallized with aluminum. Metallization, he explained, is the process by which aluminum is deposited on both sides of the film. So this made sense in theory, but how could aluminum go from not being on the film to then being on the film without at least some sort of tape? So he explains they evaporate aluminum and then deposit it onto it. It is a very, very thin layer they put in a vacuum chamber, which then evaporates the aluminum. And they say, again, like, people are confused by this and they're asking, what are they evaporating out of it? And the response was aluminum. So again, kind of difficult to understand, but that's how they make the glitter, I guess. And on the FDA's website, they explain how lakes for food and drug use are made. Color additives are classified as straight colors, lakes, and mixtures. Straight colors are color additives that have not been mixed or chemically reacted with any other substitute. For example, FD&C Blue No. 1 or Blue 1. lakes are formed by chemically reacting straight colors with precipitants and substrata. For example, Blue One Lake. Lakes for food must be used from certified batches of straight colors. One exception is carmine, which is a lake made from another extract, and I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce it. Lakes for food are made with aluminum as the precipitant and aluminum hydroxide as the substratum. Mixtures are color additives formed by mixing one color additive with another or more color additives or non-color dilutes without a chemical reaction. So, again, a little bit confusing to follow, but the poster says she knows enough about chemistry to understand that they're talking about different types of aluminum here. But there are enough things in common with the ingredients and the process to assume that GlitterX absolutely has at least the capability to manufacture FD and C colorants, particularly lakes, as I mentioned before. And just reading those quotes, I mean, even though they were a little bit hard to follow, I could definitely see how it's the same process, or at least a very, very similar process. And she's right. They do have the capability to make lakes. So she goes on to say, who are they making them for and why is it such a secret? So she says, my next step was finding out what major consumer products contain these dyes. At first, this seemed insanely overwhelming. After all, nearly every item on the grocery store shelves contains some sort of dye. So she began investigating major coloring and flavor companies for more information. So she says she has a lot of time on her hands. She's a disabled vet, but she was also studying for her master's degree in forensic accounting. So she's really good at hunting down weird information and documents on the internet. So most of what she found indicated that food manufacturers are really moving away from synthetic dyes, like the kind that GlitterX would be producing. GlitterX received a PPP loan during the COVID pandemic and was classified as a synthetic dye and pigment manufacturer with that loan. So the demand for synthetic pigments in food is now very low, with companies overwhelmingly switching to natural colors. And I mean, we've all seen this, and this is just an aside, like, people are generally becoming more conscious of what they're putting into their bodies, so this makes sense to me. So furthermore, despite how the dyes like Red 40 Lake are, they don't fit in both of the important clues given. So you wouldn't want to know, like she's saying, you wouldn't want to know that these lakes or these dyes in your food contain glitter. So that fits. But you can't look at these consumer products that contains it and see something. And remember, that's what she said. You would see something. But it could be a specialty pigment. But what specialty food dye would order such quantities as to be the company's largest client? So with cosmetics being ruled out and food looking more unlikely, she needed more clues. So she began poking around some industry's websites. So with this information about the FD&C dyes in mind, she began to look for financial information on GlitterX. They're not a public company, but there are websites that aggregate information on non-public companies for research purposes. Not all of the data is 100% reliable, but she gives a nice overview as to what the company is all about and what they do. And here's what she found. One website showed very fascinating lists of GlitterX's competitors, which they preface with the quote, "A competitive analysis shows these companies are in the same general field as GlitterX, even though they might not compete head-to-head." What are these companies in the same general field as GlitterX? Well, you've probably heard of a lot of them. They include Cardiome Therapeutics, DuPont, Weath Pharmaceuticals, Dow Chemical, Procter & Gamble, Abbott Laboratories, and Bayer. There's also a list of local competitors, and these are companies that are also headquartered in New Jersey who are apparently in the, quote, same general field as GlitterX. So these companies are Merck, Teva Pharmaceuticals, and I apologize, I'm definitely butchering the pronunciation of all of these and like things earlier in this article. There are a lot of medical and chemical terms here that I'm definitely pronouncing wrong. So
probably
bear with
doing
me.
It better than me. So
I appreciate you saying that, but probably not. So the next company, another pharmaceutical company, is Zoetis. And then another is Avonic, which is a paint company. And then the last is Formosa Plastics. So I don't know if you guys notice, but that is an awful lot of pharmaceutical companies. In fact, GlitterX is listed as a biotech company on several industry-specific sites if you look around a bit. They don't advertise it, but they definitely seem to have some major ties to the pharmaceutical world. So I'm going to pause there. What do you guys think about that? Because to me at this point, I mean, that makes sense to me. Like if you look at some pills, like you would definitely see something. Like it kind of matches both clues that we were given. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't think that medicine or, you know, things like that would have glitter in them.
That's true. Well, and again, too, I mean, even if we let's just say I still stick with what I said in the very beginning, right? That she realized that it could be controversial what she's going to say. We talked about the military. We talked about the beauty industry. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry is also a very, very controversial industry. And so could that be why they backtracked on it? Assuming she backtracked, of course, right? Maybe she didn't. Maybe she just didn't want to say it. Who knows? I could see it. I think it makes sense, especially based on everything you've said. I mean, you really kind of, you know, whoever did this research, I mean, they really have kind of eliminated a lot of other options, you know, in terms of things that you ingest, you know? So, interesting. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have guessed it. That's for sure.
Yep. And again, like this is on Reddit and she has done a ton of research and I'm really impressed by her research, but this is by no means, she even says like she's not going to claim like she solved the big mystery, but
right.
It's very intriguing and it does make sense. So basically I'm going to kind of skip ahead. She goes into more about why she believes that the pharmaceuticals would be using glitter. But basically, she kind of ties it all together in the manufacturer for the coatings and the dyes in some of these supplies or ingredients in their products. The supplier is GlitterX, or they don't confirm that, sorry, but they say like we've confirmed that it's the same polymer used in glitter, and she goes through all this. So
so kind of confirmed again, but not confirmed, like as close as you're gonna get, essentially.
Not confirmed exactly. So she has a lot of different clues, but she's saying it's like the same polymer used in the coating as the dye, and they definitely have the means to do this and they're in the same industry. There's just a lot of overwhelming clues and evidence to show this. And yeah, so cosmetic colorings and coatings are used in one other major way. And this is what we were saying before, and this is the cosmetic or the colorings in medicine. And this is kind of how she ties it all together, as I just said. If you Google the WSR coating, you'll find that a lot of paints and industrial items use it. You'll also find plenty of information to show that the WSR coating in pharmacology is used a lot. It's used to color code medications, discourage abuse, control the rate of the medication's release. And most of these coatings are made and sold by DuPont and Dow Chemical, both, again, listed as Glitterix's top competitors. Both companies say that they have the capability, like I said, to produce pigmented and shimmering versions of this coating. Merrick, again, listed as a competitor, even offers a pearlized coating for tablets and capsules. And if you need a shimmer pigment for such a coating, why wouldn't you purchase from a company that's familiar with the materials that you'll need in the coating? So if they had experience making the WSR coatings, you might just contract them again to create certain capsules or coatings for your medication. So again, Glitterix said that this client is their biggest, which makes everyone latch onto it being something like space travel and boat paint. But medicine in production is by far a bigger industry than either of those. Millions and millions of pills of every kind are produced every day in America. It's bigger than the cosmetic industry. It's bigger than the personal care industry, which, again, uses those exact same pigments and binders that we were talking about before. And Glitterix, again, like I said, is open about the fact that they supply those. So maybe just a little bit too open, she says. She found a blurb from 2002 from an industry journal, NutriCost, that openly states that the company sells pigments mainly to cosmetic manufacturers. And in the chemical world, it seems that that's what Glitterix is known for making. So again, we're keeping in mind throughout this whole article that Glitterix is very open about the majority of their glitter being used for cosmetic applications. And in a way, that's still true. They do manufacture mainly cosmetic glitter, but it seems like the same pigments, coatings, and plastic binders used in cosmetics are also the same ones used in medicines. And again, Glitterix is located in New Jersey, where a large number of pharmaceutical companies also operate. So, like I said, she is totally convinced that it is the pharmaceutical manufacturer industry that is Glitterix's number one client. And she, again, is very open with saying she can't know this for sure, but it's the best fit for what we know at this point. First, she kind of summarizes this in a nice way. Like, they don't want you to know that it's glitter. That was the first clue. Second, you would be able to see something but not tell that it's glitter, like we said in the middle of the article. What do you guys think about that and everything that she kind of found and summed up throughout the whole article?
I mean, it makes total sense, honestly speaking. Like, I mean, even if they say that the beauty industry or the cosmetic industry is still one of their, one of the biggest or whatever, I mean, cosmetics and pharmaceuticals, I mean, those are both two huge industries. So I don't doubt it at all. I'm not going to do the research she did. I'll be honest with you.
I'm taking her word for it.
I'm taking her word for it on this one too. And I don't doubt it again, whether or not, like I've been continuously saying throughout kind of this particular story, whether it was a slip up and she, the person who was giving the tour realized what she said was going to be controversial or not, who knows? Either way, I think from like a very conspiracy approach where, oh, she didn't want to say pharmaceuticals because pharmaceutical bad, or she just wanted to not say it at all. And everything she says does match up with this person who did all of this intense research. So I don't know. I totally can see it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely fits. And we haven't done, as we've been saying throughout our episode, like a ton of research on our topics for these episodes. So let's also keep in mind, like, we're reading one person's theory and it all makes sense. And I'm sold based on what she's saying. But there could be like another more straightforward reason, which is just like the company signed an NDA or like their main customer doesn't want the public to know. And it might just be like a more boring answer. Like you said, like the person was excited, the tour guide was excited to say it and then realized she couldn't say it. So or it could just be something.
It's much more sinister. And they're thinking a nuke. I don't know.
Cameron, absolutely not. I said we are leaving down. This on a high note.
Oh, man. That's so interesting. And all of this because of a slip up, a potential slip up anyway, in an interview. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's definitely reading through all of her research. It's like really cool and it's interesting. It's like, oh, that totally makes sense. You feel like you're piecing it together. It's just funny, like how it all came to be and like how the internet, as the internet does with a lot of things, has kind of taken this and run with it. And everyone is so invested. I mean, if you Google, I was even nervous to bring this topic up because I feel like it's a more well-known thing based on like Googling. There are tons of people talking about it. Like people have their own theories.
That's wild.
There's updates on it. Like, yeah, it's funny.
But, well, very interesting case. I mean, all of our cases have been very interesting, but that one is definitely different than how we started. So, but thank you everyone again for listening to this week's episode of the Threelogy podcast. As always, you can find all of the sources in both the show notes and on threelogypodcast.com. This time it is more important than ever because we didn't put together these stories. We read them off of Reddit or off of other websites. So we definitely want to make sure that we give the original authors the credit that they deserve for their hard work, especially the one that Morgan just read, because she clearly went to town on research and she deserves all that credit because God knows that was not from us. So like I said before, if you guys like this format that we're doing, awesome. If you absolutely hate it, don't worry. This isn't the permanent format. We will be coming back in 2 weeks from now with normal episodes when we kick off with season two. But if you do like this format, definitely let us know. It's something that we're trying out. It's a little bit easier for us in terms of recording and really just kind of going with it, especially during those really busy times. So definitely let us know. Send us a message on social media or just leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Obviously, when you leave a review on Apple Podcasts, you do get a shout out. So you could be the first shout out of season two. So thanks again, everybody, for listening. We will catch you on social media. And until next week, we'll talk to you then.